Are you Katya?
I'm Katya.
Hi, Lindsay Lizarski.
Hi, Lindsay.
Nice to meet you.
Cool, come on in.
Catalina said you had some old records.
Oh, you've got a lot of old records.
Yeah,
they're in the back here.
Like many people, Katya Gorka remembers growing up and watching The Cosby Show. As an immigrant kid in Boston, she wanted to be part of the Huxtable family.
They're all charming in their own way, like even Vanessa.
She now lives near Temple University, where she studied film, the same university Bill Cosby attended. Our producer, Lindsay Lazarski, stopped by as she was paring down her old record collection.
I can't look at him anymore. I can't see these records, and I can't see Bill Cosby's face as this innocent comic anymore. It's painfully ironic. I mean, look at these titles. Revenge, Two Daughters, Two Brothers, The Tank, Smoking. Should we play something called Wives? To be honest, like, most of them are, you know, fairly unlistenable. Like, the records are not, they're not actually that funny.
Did you find yourself laughing to the stories or anything like that?
No, I kind of like, I have like one of those kind of question marks floating over your head when you're listening to something like, should I be laughing now?
What is it in the makeup of a married woman? Because they are two different people, a single woman and a married woman. Single woman is hungry. She's out there trying, please, somebody, let me have a man somewhere, sometime. I'll do anything, I'll dress on time. I'll cook for you, I'll sew, I'll let you gamble, I won't bother you, and I'll do all these things. And then when you get married, all right, Herman, we got you.
So what are your thoughts when you listen to that?
Wow, everything's kind of wrapped up with the controversy a little bit. Like, you kind of... And also the moment that we live in, really. I'd like to think we're a little bit more empowered. Women who maybe don't think that's so funny.
From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Cosby Unraveled. I'm Annette John Hall. Mary Claire Dale has to be about the only person who didn't watch The Cosby Show.
I really don't have a dog in this fight because in the sense that I lived away during the years and didn't have a TV during the years that his show was on. So
you didn't
have
a TV?
Right. It was my 20s.
Dale is a reporter for the Associated Press. For most of her 30-year career in journalism, she's covered the courts.
In a weird way, that makes me really better suited because I'm like, I really have no like big, huge loyalty toward this. I was in love with this guy in the show and, you know,
right.
Grew up watching
You're
it.
You're like one of maybe two
I'm
or
like
three
a Martian.
People.
So I was here at the AP in 2005 when Andrea Constant first went to police in Montgomery County.
Andrea Constant met Bill Cosby while working for the Temple women's basketball team. She saw him as a mentor, somebody she'd go to for career advice. They met on several occasions and twice she turned down his advances. In 2005, she told police that Cosby had drugged and sexually assaulted her. When the district attorney at the time declined to press criminal charges, she filed a civil suit. Cosby gave a deposition, under oath, where he spent 4 days answering questions from investigators. And that's what makes Constant's case different. Again, Mary Claire Dale.
Well, 10 years later, when more and more women were coming forward and the debate over Cosby's behavior was very much in the news, it was frustrating to me and probably to a lot of people because I felt like there was just a lot of noise. Scores of women saying that they had been drugged and molested, and Cosby's agents either overtly or covertly saying that they were liars or gold diggers. And I remembered that the only time he had ever given a deposition about his sexual conduct was here in Philadelphia in the courthouse that I covered. And so I said, we've got to see what we can do to try to get that.
In 2015, Dale and attorneys for the Associated Press filed a motion to unseal the deposition.
I just felt like that would add information to the debate over his legacy, if you will, and his behavior. So we petitioned the judge, and we had oral arguments with Cosby's lawyers. The judge said that, you know, Cosby's public moralizing about things had made him a public figure and diminished his right to privacy over matters that his lawyer said would be embarrassing for the star. And the judge said that embarrassment was not enough to warrant that the item still be sealed.
The judge gave Dale access to the testimony and made the deposition public. Cosby's testimony painted a very different picture from his family-friendly image.
I would say sex and drugs are the two big highlights.
Rock and roll?
Yeah, I don't recall. There was some jazz, I think. I don't recall any rock and roll. The Quaaludes, of course, was a big bold-faced word that stuck out to us and that we ran with, and that involved him saying that back in the 70s he had obtained prescriptions for Quaaludes kind of as a party drug to give to women that he was interested in having sex with.
For those too young to remember, Quaaludes are depressants. They cause drowsiness and reduced heart rate.
He acknowledged under oath over many decades of behavior which involved inviting very young actresses from teenage years through 30 or what have you to his townhouse, apartment, bungalow, hotel room to engage in quote-unquote acting lessons, often which involved a drunken scene where the woman had to be drunk or act drunk.
Cosby said he liked to stay sober, but admitted he would encourage others to drink. At the center of the trial, the night in question occurred in early 2004. Cosby invited Andrea Constant to a suburban Philadelphia home. Constant said he offered her some wine, and what he said were herbal pills for stress. According to police reports, Cosby told her the pills would make her feel good, take the edge off, and he placed them in her hands and he said, "Take the water, and then taste the wine." When Constance said she didn't want to drink on an empty stomach, Cosby told her again, "Just taste the wine." She took a few sips.
And then they're sort of on the couch together, quote-unquote spooning or such, and the way that she alleges she was moving in and out of consciousness, semi-conscious, drug, in a stupor, unable to really shout out or stop him, etc. And his hands are there, and he's putting his hand down her pants, and he says, "I am not stopped." It was somewhere between permission and rejection.
Cosby told investigators that Constant never told him to stop, never pushed him away. He described it as consensual.
The main evidence in the case will be the testimony of Andrea Constant.
Deborah Turkheimer is a law professor at Northwestern University and a former prosecutor who's handled sex crimes.
So according to the complaint, and I expect this will be similar to the testimony on the stand, she, shortly after consuming the drugs and alcohol, experienced legs that became rubbery and like jelly. Her vision became blurry. She felt nauseous. She was in and out. And while she was frozen and paralyzed, unable to move or speak, Cosby digitally penetrated her and fondled her breasts.
When she woke up early the next morning, her bra was undone, her clothes disheveled. Cosby gave her a muffin and walked her to the door. She left without saying a word. On December 30th, 2015, more than 10 years after that night in question, Cosby was charged with 3 counts of aggravated indecent sexual assault. The charges were filed just 2 days before the statute of limitations on the case were up. The deposition that Dale fought to have unsealed led to the first criminal charges against Cosby.
It just came down to the fact that I felt like we weren't really getting any clarity on the situation, even as more and more women came forward and more maybe cable TV debates were being held about it. It was still just a he said, she said thing. And I think, you know, it's still to be determined whether or not Cosby is guilty of a crime. A jury will determine that. But I think the deposition did reveal just what his conduct and almost his attitude toward women was. And then when you see what happens behind the scenes, I think it's like a little bit crushing for all of us.
I think my first reaction, I was just sort of in shell shock, relieved, elated. When I saw the mugshot, I started to cry. It just hit me so hard, and I really didn't anticipate that I was going to react that way, but I did.
That's Victoria Valentino being interviewed on CNN. She says she was drugged and raped by Cosby in 1969. Her allegations, like almost all of the rest, fall outside of the statute of limitations. When Andrea Constant first came forward in 2005, the Montgomery County DA said the year-long delay was one of the reasons he decided not to prosecute. He suggested the delay raised questions about Constant's credibility.
It's very difficult
to get a case prosecuted.
Salamisha Tillett teaches at the University of Pennsylvania. She's also co-founder of A Long Walk Home, a nonprofit that pushes an end to violence against girls and women. Only 16% of all rapes ever get reported to police. So to Tillett, the fact that Cosby has even been charged and is going to trial seems like a miracle.
So given statute of limitations, given the fact that the victim was drugged, given the fact that she came forward a year later, there are a lot of things that very rarely work in the victim's favor. So it's already working against you. So then take into account all the other factors. What obviously made it possible was the massive amount of women coming forward and saying, this too happened to me.
Tillett is a survivor of sexual assault, and she says unless you've been a victim, you can't understand the trauma of rape.
Victims of sexual assault process the trauma differently and oftentimes in their own way. I mean, it's almost like we don't really understand what rape does to people. Your whole life is recalibrated. Your whole sense of trust, your judgment, your relationship to your sexuality, your relationship to your body, your relationship to the word no. And yet, the way in which people think that rape victims are supposed to not only just move on, but somehow have the fortitude to hold someone accountable by going through the judicial system, which is not a friendly place to many people who come forward, it's like mind-blowing. Like, people do not seem to understand the despair that many rape victims find themselves in.
So far, the judge may permit only one other victim to testify, but that may be enough for the prosecution to outline a pattern of behavior from Cosby.
I represent 33 accusers of Bill Cosby.
Gloria Allred's a celebrity attorney. She's represented high-profile clients, including the family of Nicole Brown Simpson, one of Tiger Woods' mistresses, and Melanie Brown, formerly of the Spice Girls, who wanted to establish Eddie Murphy as the father of her child. Surprisingly, Allred says she and Cosby have a lot in common.
He was born in Philadelphia and raised there, and I was born in Philadelphia and raised there. He attended an all-boys high school, Central High School. I attended Philadelphia High School for Girls, which was the equivalent of Central High, and he went to Los Angeles in the 60s, and I went to Los Angeles in the 60s.
But of course, there is one big difference between her and Cosby.
I've never been charged with a crime, and he's now charged with 3 felonies.
Of all the accusers represented by Allred, only one has been permitted to testify against Cosby. She's referred to as victim number 6.
The woman I represent, prior victim number 6, you know, she's never filed a civil lawsuit. There's no economic benefit here. She's doing this because if she's subpoenaed, she'll be doing her duty.
Allred said she didn't know why victim number 6 was chosen. But after decades of allegations and denials, Cosby will face Andrea Constant and victim number 6 in a court of law.
I feel that both Andrea and victim number 6 are extremely courageous to be willing to testify in this case, because the cross-examination by the defense is going to be very brutal. Because, as usual, the defense will always try to put any person who claims she is a victim on trial and, you know, try to distract from the fact that they represent a man who is the actual defendant who is on trial.
Credibility is key in cases of sexual assault, says Deborah Turkheimer.
The jury really does have to believe her. And so what the defense, I expect, will do is attack it on a number of fronts. The two knew one another, and so there was a relationship that could give rise to some sort of motive to lie. I expect that this will be a part of the defense. Maybe there was a reason to enact revenge on Cosby. Maybe she wanted money. She did wait about a year to report to police, and the argument will be that this is inconsistent with the behavior of a sexual assault victim. She returned to Cosby's house a few months after the incident in question, and then went apparently to see a show that he was performing in with her parents. And there too, the defense, I expect, will argue that this is not how a sexual assault victim behaves.
She says the prosecution will make the case that sexual assault victims often know and have a relationship with their attackers, that no physical force needs to take place, and that victims often wait to report their assaults.
Sexual assault victims have many reasons to be reluctant about moving forward with a criminal case, but in this instance, Cosby's fame may have been an added deterrent.
Again, Salamisha Tillett.
Bill Cosby's script, so to speak, was about mentoring and tutoring, helping young women break into an industry. And he's a very powerful man. So that doesn't mean that you are going to assume that you have to sleep with the person. But he's Bill Cosby. I guess what I'm saying is, how does networking, how does mentoring work? Like, that's actually how it works. Like, if someone has like a position of power and you're interested in getting into their industry, you're more than likely to hang out with them, want to get to know them. You're definitely not expecting them to drug you.
We reached out to Bill Cosby's lawyers. They denied our request for an interview. But the comedian recently broke his silence after 2 years in an interview with Michael Smirkanish on a Sirius XM radio show.
None of the conversation from you discusses the upcoming trial.
No. No, that's not something that any smart person would want to do.
Do you expect to testify on your own behalf at that trial?
No, I do not.
Are you at liberty to discuss any of the allegations that are pending against you?
No, I am not.
Turkheimer says the timing of Cosby speaking out is no accident, especially since the trial begins on June 5th.
This seems to be part of an effort to change the optics, in the words of the defense team, to sort of shift the narrative so that Cosby is the victim of this public rush to judgment. I think the hope is that if public opinion shifts outside the courtroom, that percolates into the courtroom.
A jury will decide whether Cosby is guilty or not of sexually assaulting Andrea Constant. But we asked nearly everyone we spoke with, what's justice? Barry Williams, who lives in the Philadelphia neighborhood where Cosby grew up.
Whatever the actual verdict is, his career is dead in the water. So he's already been punished in that way.
Gloria Allred.
I hope there'll be justice, but not just justice for Mr. Cosby, but justice for the persons who allege they are victims of Mr. Cosby, and justice for the community.
Michael Eric Dyson is a cultural critic and author.
At the end of the day, Bill Cosby is an extraordinary genius who may also be a morally reprehensible human being who engaged in potentially illegal and certainly immoral behavior. But that's Thomas Jefferson. That's many of the founding fathers who owned slaves. That's men who mistreat women constantly and who should be held to account, by the way. And we are living with the complicated result of acknowledging his genius while also having to confront the moral and ethical erosion and depravity that may be his fate as well.
For updates as the trial unfolds, subscribe to Cosby Unraveled. Special thanks to WHYY's Paige Flager and Bobby Allen. The music on the show was created by Tony Trove and Mike Vivas. Brett Rader saved our lives with editing help at crunch time. Shout out to Mixmaster Charlie Kyer and engineers Diana Martinez and Bob, don't forget the S, Alls. The show was produced by Lindsay Lazarski and Jeanette Woods. I'm Annette Chan Hall.